John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King Jr., and the Phone Call That Changed History by Stephen Levingston. Before dawn on Wednesday, October 26, 1960, Martin Luther King Jr. was sleeping in a prison cell in DeKalb County, Georgia, when sheriff deputies aimed their flashlight beams into his face and barked at him to get up. They handcuffed him, shackled his legs, and hustled him out of the cell. It was 4 a.m. Hurried along, he asked repeatedly for an explanation, but the men said nothing. With a terrible foreboding, King soon found himself seated in the back of a police car rolling into the night. The only light came from the headlamps piercing the darkness. Like all black men, King feared the chilling portent of a late-night drive into the countryside. It had happened to others. The stories he'd heard were horrific. At home in Atlanta, Coretta King knew nothing of her husband's ominous ride. She was 6 months pregnant with their third child, and she had already had an emotional week. King hadn't wanted to join the student-led sit-in, but the band of youths, members of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, insisted. The SNCC was well-organized and impatient. Its target was one of Atlanta's venerable institutions, Rich's Department Store. Its goal? To desegregate the store's snack bars and restaurants. The young activists urged King to come along and go to jail with them to draw attention to their campaign. King advised the students to hold off until after the presidential election, now just weeks away, but the students saw an opportunity to force the candidates to address the issue of segregation. If King were arrested with dozens of young protesters, then both contenders would have no choice but to speak out. "We thought that with Dr. King being involved in it," said student leader Lonnie C. King, "we would really see where these guys stand." The students' passion and conscience were impossible for Martin Luther King to ignore. On that early Wednesday morning, Martin Luther King Jr. had no idea where the two deputies were taking him. An hour passed, and he realized he was deep into cracker country where no one protested a lynching. By dawn, King discovered he'd been granted a less evil fate as the squad car turned into the maximum security state prison in Reidsville. But his danger was far from over. If he were put to hard labor, as the judge had ordered, he would work side by side in a road gang with ruthless white criminals, many of them killers who had nothing to lose and everything to gain, national notoriety and prison respect, by murdering a black celebrity. On that same Wednesday morning, Senator John Kennedy phoned the governor of Georgia, Ernest Vandiver. Some quiet back-channel way had to be found to free the civil rights leader. Kennedy was motivated by his outrage, by his sympathy for the King family, and by bald political calculation. In a meeting with Kennedy just weeks earlier, King had urged the senator to take some dramatic action to prove to blacks that his commitment to their cause was genuine. His moment had arrived. If Kennedy were able to play a decisive role in King's release, the black community was likely to reward him with an outpouring of support. But if he acted on King's behalf, he risked a vicious backlash from Southern whites. The senator had to walk a fine line, show decency to a black man without alienating the white community. Nixon was embittered by his narrow loss and the surprising black turnout for Kennedy. Later explaining his no comment at the height of the King uproar, he admitted, "This was a fatal communication gap. I had meant Herb Klein, my press secretary, to say that I had no comment at this time." This explanation doesn't quite conform to reality. Nixon, in fact, had heard a drumbeat of voices within his campaign begging him to speak out immediately, but he remained silent. John Kennedy never explained his reason for placing the call to Coretta King. Was the candidate driven by politics or by goodwill? Cynics see only a man of callous manipulation, and torchbearers for Kennedy see only his grace and humanity. As Martin Luther King Jr. himself recognized, both impulses inspired Kennedy's call, and they did not necessarily contradict each other. And that 90-second conversation laid massive expectations on the Kennedy presidency. Before he even settled into the White House, Jack Kennedy was put on notice that blacks from Harlem to Montgomery expected him to listen to their leader, Martin Luther King Jr., and hear their cries for equality.